In this episode of Hot Hardware's 2.5 Geeks, we'll have GeForce GTX 1070 Ti shootouts. GPU pricing, is that going to stabilize one of these eons? Samsung's next Galaxy, the Galaxy S9. Asus rips off Apple, and Huawei has a new mate. Hey, welcome back to Hot Hardware's 2.5 Geeks. I'm Dave Altavilla, and we are now at the 5:30 slot. We decided we'd push a little bit later in the day. Hopefully, more of you folks can join us live here. And with me today, live as well, the incomparable Marco Cipetta and somebody new for today, Chris Getting, who's really not new, but new, you know, recently anyways. Guys, how you doing? What's going on over there?
I'm good. I don't know if I'd say I'm live. I'm present, but I don't know if I'm actually live.
I know the feeling.
Yeah. Live or is it Memorex? Chris, are you is everybody upright and in vertical here in Maine?
Trying to be. Brittany's feeling a little under the weather right now, but I'm still doing okay. And we haven't had snow in a bit, so that's not too bad.
Crazy. It was 65 degrees down here today in the Boston area, which for us is just like nuts. Like global warming is real, or whatever they call it, climate change. And yeah, man. So folks that might not know Chris, he is an elite member of the Hot Hardware staff. That's covers nice. mostly a reviews beat for us. By day he's an IT admin extraordinaire, or what's your official title by day, Chris?
Systems admin coordinator or something like that. I fix people's try problems.
Not, yeah. You fix stuff instead of break stuff. That's good. And, he's an editor for Hot Hardware as well. And, good to have you with us, Chris. Chris will be joining us, now and again, when Paul can't and vice versa. So, we'll mix these guys in at their leisure, and that's what this is. It's kind of leisure hour for us, right? We don't want to work too hard. Well, all right,
we play what games about you? And video cards for a living. We don't work that hard.
Yeah, sometimes it's a grind, you know that.
It's a grind. There's hours, but my hands are still pretty, you know.
Yeah, that's true. You're not digging ditches for 11. That's true. And yeah, we get to look at some pretty cool new technology. Lots of stuff going on this week in the land of mobile devices, Mobile World Congress going on in scenic Barcelona, Spain. And so we'll be covering some mobile stuff today. But lots of stuff going on in the computing space in general, especially for enthusiasts these days. Marco, we recently rounded up, or I guess corralled into a shootout, if you will, a pair of GeForce GTX 1070 Ti graphics cards from Asus and Zotac. What do you know about these guys, and are they actually approachable from a pricing standpoint?
So I know quite a bit. This is one of those articles that's both, you know, kind of happy and sad. So here's the happy stuff. Here's all the good stuff. We had two really awesome cards in the shootout. We tried to wrangle up a bunch more. This is one of the hazards of trying to pull together roundups. Some companies want to participate, some can't. The timing doesn't work for others. Yada, yada, yada. Whatever. We got two badass cards in from Asus and Zotac. So we had the Zotac GeForce GTX 1070 Ti Amp Extreme Edition, basically their big bad boy. And we had the Asus GeForce GTX 1070 Ti Strix Gaming Card. Both of these beasts are essentially three slot cards. The Zotac card is three slots. The Asus card is 2.5 slots. Zotac card's a little bit wider. They both have, you know, RGB lighting that's customizable. Asus is a little more customizable because you can sync it with their motherboards and do some other cool stuff. And performance is, you know, expectedly kick butt. The 1070 Ti falls in where you'd expect between the 1070 and the 1080. These particular cards are factory overclocked, so they're way closer to the 1080 range. Just to give you an example, in 3D Mark TimeSpy DX12 test, these cards both score right around 6200 GeForce 1070 is like 5300, so significantly faster than the standard 1070, a couple of percentage points faster than a Founders Edition 1070 Ti as well. Now, because these are, you know, these are not stock, these are custom big bad boy graphics cards, you get a couple of advantages. One, both of them are basically dead silent at idle. The ASUS card in particular, the fans stop under 60 degrees C, so the card is dead silent if you're not gaming. But even when gaming, because they have these beefy coolers and multiple fans, they can stay quiet, so they don't generate a ton of noise. And they're also really overclockable. Both cards' GPUs overclocked over 2 gigahertz, and that pushed, for example, the 3D Mark scores up over 6,600 for both cards. In a game, Middle Earth Shadow of War, at 4K resolution, stock, they're like 34 frames per second. Overclocked, they're just shy of 40, like 38 frames per second. So lots of free performance available with a little software. So that's all the happy stuff. Want to know the sad stuff?
Oh, don't bum me out.
I have to bum everybody out.
This dollar is signs?
Exactly. A good segue into where we're going to go next. The MSRPs on these cards are, you know, hover around $600, $680 bucks. But if you go to buy one today, I think the cheapest I could find, and it was like from one of those sketchy Amazon sellers, was like $844 bucks, and the average was like $960. So they're... The GPU market's still getting hammered. This is just one of the unfortunate things when timing on an article happens after an unfortunate event in the market, like the cryptocurrency craze that's killing GPUs for gamers, and you can't get these things at MSRP. Are they great graphics cards? Absolutely. Would I spend $1,000 on one today? No, I really wouldn't. I'd ride what you got for now and dial down your settings and wait for this market to settle.
Yeah, that sucks. You know, it's you wonder if there's anything that NVIDIA or AMD can do about this. And clearly they would have probably done something if they could have. But yeah, we're still stuck here in a market where what should be an upper mid-range graphics card is unattainable at its MSRP price point. What's MSRP again on the 1070 Ti with these guys? Like $400.
I don't remember specifically what NVIDIA's MSRP was. I want to say $499, but because these are custom and factory overclocked, their MSRPs were higher. Like the Zotac card on their website is listed at $599. That one I found for $944 on Amazon.
Right. What do you think? Okay, so let's back up a notch and maybe talk about the product a little bit more. What do you think at MSRP? From a value proposition, what's sort of the sweet spot price performance where obviously, you know, especially with NVIDIA cards, well, I guess and AMD as well, you can really spend a ton of money on a killer fast graphics card, but you reach a point of diminishing return at a certain price point. And I guess where's the sweet spot right now in your opinion for GPUs?
It depends on your gaming preference. If you're a low res, super high frame rate guy, you can still get away with the standard 1070. If you're a 4K guy, you want 4K, you want the most beautiful pixels at the highest resolutions at the balanced price point, it's the 1070 Ti, it's these cards. Or you know what, 1080s, you can find 1080s for not much more. So the 1070 Ti or a 1080, the original 1080.
Yeah, not a 1080 Ti, but a 1080 straight, yeah. Cool stuff. I mean, you know, I guess 4K gaming, you know, there's not a lot of folks there. I think probably if you looked at, I would have to look at what the Steam hardware survey looks like today, but I would not be surprised, obviously, if 1080p is where the bulk of the market is at, with maybe 1440p being the next resolution up. Is that maybe a fair assessment? And then 4K is kind of niche.
Yeah, I think most serious gamers are 1440p. The guys with unlimited budgets, the much smaller group, are at 4K, and lots of the esports guys they love those super high refresh rates and super high frame rates.
Yeah, well, that's the other point too, right? The faster your GPU, the faster you can push those frame rates at 1080p, and you know, certainly if you're not rocking G-Sync or something like that in a panel, having that high refresh rate to push or frame rate to push with a high refresh rate really smooths things out nicely. Chris, have you been shopping graphics card lately? What do you have for an opinion on this?
Do I look like I'm made of money? I don't think I can afford a low end card with these prices these days.
Yeah.
I mean, AMD and NVIDIA are both in a really tough spot because I guess they could ramp up production, but to do that, they're going to need infrastructure to do it. And you know, the moment that they ramp up production, cryptocurrency is going to go splat, and then they're left with all this, you know, infrastructure to build graphics chips, and the demand is gone. So, you know, if I'm AMD and NVIDIA, I'm just going to steer the course for now, I think. As nice as it would be to have them ramp up production and meet demand, yeah, I do understand the risk of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there was certainly some commentary in NVIDIA's earnings call recently, and I believe AMD even went on record as well, Lisa Su, in one of their recent earnings calls, saying they were going to ramp up GPU production to meet demand based on not only gamers, but for cryptocurrency in general, just to somehow alleviate the supply-demand shortage dynamic that causes that pricing, that price gouging that goes on in retail. There was also another headline that we reported on this week. NVIDIA GPU pricing won't stabilize until Q3, claims retailer. But what about Ampere and Volta? Now, there was a retailer by the name of, I'm blanking on it right now. Marco, you're probably familiar with this guy. Yeah, thank you. They were speaking with some NVIDIA reps who specifically noted probably not till about Q3. Now, what's curious about that is it's sort of a specific timeline that they're noting perhaps we'll see some relief for this pricing situation. Marco, what do you know about that? And is there something to look forward to there?
I think so. So the current rumors are NVIDIA is going to have something to say late next month. Whether or not, I don't think anything is going to launch next month, but I think we're going to know more about what's going to happen in about a month at GTC, at the graphics, at the GPU technology conference happening in California. And I will be there, by the way. So stop by the site for news from GTC. Now this particular conversation, a fellow who went by the handle B Hutch from Mastrop was saying NVIDIA was there and specifically told them a couple of reasons for the high pricing and that it's not going to stabilize till later. One is what Chris was talking about, crypto, and we were all talking about the cryptocurrency craze just gobbling up all the GPUs, is pushing up demand. But there's also a shortage of the memory necessary to build all the cards, both the new, you know, really bleeding edge HBM2 and standard GDDR5 and 6, because they're going into other devices as well. So the combination of huge demand and lack of memory, or relative lack of memory, is just pushing prices up. And NVIDIA themselves doesn't think it's going to stabilize until later in the year, until Q3, as you mentioned. I honestly don't think anybody knows. If Samsung and Micron and others can ramp up memory, which I'm sure they can and they will, because it's just like, you know, raking in money. If the more they make, the more they're going to sell of that. But how cryptocurrency plays out, you know, the government could swoop in next month and pass some bill that just ruins it and it tanks completely. Or we could see another crazy rally and watch Bitcoin hit 20K. Who knows? So I honestly don't think anybody knows, and I don't think we're going to have a clear answer for a while.
It's speculation all the way down.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, there are some interesting inflection points that you could sort of speculate a little bit more, you know, sort of hazard a semi-intelligent guess. And you alluded to them, Mark.
I couldn't hazard memory. A semi-intelligent guess.
Well, semi, right? Come on.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no. So there's memory technologies involved here. And currently, in addition to GPU shortages, because miners are gobbling them up, there's actual shortages in GDDR5 memory, which, by the way, is also, I guess, used in handsets. I wasn't even aware of that. That kind of blows me away. So the handset market is gobbling up. I think it may be more like wafer starts for memory. I don't know if it's the same memory. Yeah, exactly. So anyways, But what we know is that there is an NVIDIA next generation architecture on the market. That's Volta. It uses HBM2. It's a different type of memory. Okay. So maybe there's that, maybe that Q3 timeframe is when we might see something that employs HBM2. The other thing we're aware of that's public, been publicly talked about by the memory companies, Micron and others, is that GDDR6 is on the horizon as well. And so maybe you start to see some relief there as these new memory technologies come into the market to help manufacturing and to give manufacturing options for different SKUs of graphics cards. Maybe that's the theory.
Okay. I mean, that's the safe bet. The entire next gen lineup's not going to have HBM2. And this is what happened when Micron announced GDDR5X. It was like, hey, you know, potentially next gen graphics products will use this. And then, you know, that May, the May right after that announcement, we saw the 1080 with GDDR5X. So it's a safe bet you're going to see graphics cards with GDDR6.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have a comment in the chat from Tuon, who writes for us and works at Optoma now, selling really nice projectors. Tuon mentions you could always just go with the last gen GPU.
Yeah. Once a sales guy, always a sales guy.
980 Ti, well, that's not really good for mining. 980 Ti is still plenty powerful if you're not running at 4K. You can run lots of games with the 980 Ti, and you can find those relatively cheap.
Yeah.
And I also see Craig in the chat. If that's Craig Dieter, make another comment because I have a message for Craig Dieter also, but I want to make sure it's the right Craig.
Uh-oh, he's getting called out. Uh-oh, what did Craig do?
No, it's what I did for Craig.
Oh, all right. Okay. Well, we'll steer clear of that for now. That confuses me.
I'll let you know. if he comments, I'll let you know.
Shrouded in mystery. Very good. Very good. No worries. Well, you know, yeah, we'll have to see how things shake out. I think for sure something's got to give in the GPU market. And 1070 Ti's look great if you can get them at the price point that they're supposed to be at. But performance is certainly good. And Asus and Zotac make some good stuff.
Remember when Titans came in at like $1,000 and we thought that was absolutely insane? Who's going to pay $1,000 for a graphics card? And now we're right up there.
Yeah.
7 series.
Yeah. For everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nuts. Nuts. Nuts indeed. Well, you know, let's stay tuned. Marco, did you have, before we wrap that up, did you have a favorite from the duo, the dynamic duo that was in that shootout?
For me, it's a tough call. Sean, who wrote the article for us, leaned slightly towards the Asus card because it had more customizable lighting, a couple extra cooling features. You can actually attach additional fans to it if you wanted. It was a little smaller, and it overclocked slightly higher, so he leaned towards the Asus card. I'd probably lean that way, too, because I'm not a huge fan of these triple slot cards. They're just freaking gigantic. But they're both awesome. And you know what? I've had particularly good luck with Zotac cards. So I would have no trouble with either. I think they're both really nice graphics cards.
I've been running a Zotac card since 2012, 2013, whatever the 650 Ti came out. And it's still going strong. So no problem here.
Yep.
Cool. Rocking the Mangia shirt there, Chris, I see too, huh?
Oh, yes.
The vintage Man Gear shirt. Mm-hmm. Cool. Very cool. Well, let's move on from the enthusiast PC realm and talk a little bit about what's going on in Barcelona this week. And that's Mobile World Congress and smartphones. We've got a lot of bubbling going on in the news and in the headlines at Hot Hardware with smartphones this week. Tons of stuff going on. We've got devices in-house. We are testing feverishly and losing sleep by the minute. The Samsung Galaxy S9 was debuted this week on Sunday, Eastern time. And it is an impressive device. There it is right there in, what is that, coral or slate blue, Marco? I can't remember the name of the color.
I think it was coral blue.
It's a beautiful blue. And that is the Galaxy S9 Plus, the 6.2-inch display, super AMOLED display. Samsung's arguably the best AMOLED display in the business, I think. And I've seen a lot of them, you know, from Pixel to LG's V30 and a lot of the current flagship phones. The super AMOLED display just seems to have a little bit more brightness, a little bit more punch. 6.2-inch in the Galaxy S9 Plus. 5.8 inch in the Galaxy S9, both powered by Qualcomm Snapdragon 845, the next generation system on a chip, mobile platform by Qualcomm. It is powerful to the tune of 30% better in graphics and up to 20% better in CPU performance. You get 6 gig of RAM on the GS9 Plus, and that's sort of a, in my opinion, one of the other tips if you're also interested in a larger device. But in addition, you get that 6 gig of RAM in the GS9 Plus, might be giving you something to think about there. In addition to that, larger display. But on the S9 standard, you get a 4 gig setup. Both come standard with 64 gig of storage, onboard storage, but I think there are maybe 128 gig variants out there. I think they're still announcing the various SKUs. Comes in jet black. I've got one here. Let me show it to you. This is the jet black model. I'll try and have it not reflect too much. It is a shiny little fella. And this is the S9 Plus. Let me flip on the display, if I can get that to cooperate for me and not blow out the screen. There is the display. We got more reflection. There we go. So yeah, that's the 6.2 inch S9 Plus. It is beautiful, highly polished. The bezel's now a little bit more trim, top and bottom. That 18 by 9 aspect ratio, it's a QHD Plus display, 2960 by 1440, I believe. It is a beautiful device, super slick, absolutely a polished iteration of the S8, very similar in design, slightly smaller than the S8, just a little bit shorter than the S8 Plus. So they were able to trim it down a little bit and get the same screen size in there, amp up the specs internally, and add some really cool new features. The camera is just top-notch. There's some interesting new technologies built in the camera. You get multi-frame noise reduction technology now. You get dual cameras on the S9 Plus for things like different depth of field and bokeh effects. Really just a couple of super flagship phones. We're stepping through the benchmarks on this. Yeah, variable aperture. Thank you. Yep. Dual aperture on both devices, f1.5 and f2.4. Low light 1.5, yep. High bright situations 2.4. And these things are just decked out and strapped with the latest technology. And really, I'm just looking forward to putting them through their paces. I'm on embargo with my final impressions and performance benchmarks, all that good stuff until March 8th. But the announcement, and we can talk about the device, so I'm not telling you anything I shouldn't. Impressive so far. What do you guys think?
Yeah, so another note on the aperture. People may wonder why they would even have an option to have a slower aperture in there, because isn't more light better? Well, when you open up the aperture like that, you get a softer image from it. So when you can stop it down in bright conditions, you get a much sharper picture, which is really nice to have.
Yeah, it's basically takes some, any sort of either point and shoot or DSLR technology in a standard camera that you've had for, you know, ages now, finally brings it to the smartphone. You do have some flexibility to adjust that aperture to let in light more or less. And what we were realizing, right? The manufacturers, smartphone manufacturers, everybody was fighting to get that wider aperture lens, get it down more. So we had better low light performance. That was the problem. The problem is when you drop below like F1.8, F1.7, now you've got, we noticed, like if you look at the Pixel 2 in high bright situations, sometimes things can look a little washed out. And that's because that lens is just a wide aperture lens. And it would be great if you could close it down a little bit and cut back and bring in some of the saturation that you're missing by having just a wide aperture in a high bright situation. So this gives you that flexibility. Marco, thoughts on Samsung's new beauties? You've seen them in person.
I played with both. I think they are super nice. Samsung's done lots of cool stuff. If you come by the site, we actually have hands-on video where we show some of the really cool features, like the new slow-mo. One other thing with the camera that hasn't been talked about a whole bunch is the sensor has access to some fast DRAM on it, and it can do a really, really super slow-mo mode where it'll take 0.2 seconds of video and stretch that out to 6 seconds using 960 frames per second slow motion. And you could see just how much it slows down the video in our, it slows down the motion in the video in our hands-on. There's also the really cool translation demo that we show. Instead of having to take a picture and convert it to text and then translate it, now just, it literally just translates the sign right on the screen.
On the translation, can you confirm if they're using Google Translate as the back end on that?
They're using Microsoft Translate.
I think it's Microsoft. Yeah, I think
Is it Microsoft? Okay.
Yeah, it's Microsoft. Yeah, and we're starting to see it. I actually seen it in the Huawei Mate 10 Pro, which I'm also taking a look at right now with Paul. He's reviewing that, and I'm actually looking at one as well. Yeah, Microsoft Translate has made its way into the Google, or I should say the Android platform, the Android ecosystem, through two major manufacturers now, Huawei and Samsung. So, yeah, Marco, that you make some good points. That slow-mo feature is freaking awesome. We saw a demo where somebody snapped a picture of a dog, you know, a dog when they shake off like water or whatever, when they come in from the cold and they shake, how their body like contorts and twists. And it's in a sort of magical sort of rhythmic thing to see a dog do that in slow motion. They took a snap of a dog doing that, and it just, he was shaking off water and it just looked cool. Right. You saw that, right, Marco?
Yeah. And then, the other cool, really thoughtful feature with the slow-mo. So you have your standard manual mode where you can just switch to slow-mo and do it, but also has an automatic mode where you can capture video at standard speed. And if something comes speeding into the frame, it automatically switches to super slow-mo. So like you don't miss that moment. Yeah. Like it's just lots of these thoughtful little things that probably aren't going to come out until people use it. Cause there's just so much to cover in a review. It's really difficult to get all of these little small features covered. But I think Samsung is going to have a winner here. It's just, it really has everything. It's got the fastest platform, water resistance, dust resistance, beautiful screen, great cameras on both sides. The Bixby feature is getting more refined. There's just so much to like.
Yeah, the other thing, yeah, you mentioned that super slow mode. That is when you think about it, it sounds maybe a little gimmicky to be able to do that. But actually, if you think of the application, no, it is thoughtful. It's actually a really cool feature because here you're at the soccer field, right? You know, little Janie or Johnny comes zipping through, right? And man, you want to slow down the action and catch it. There you go. There's the freaking, you know, hero shot, right? It's really cool. Absolutely. Could work out well. Chris, will you be looking at incorporating? I know you're a Shutterbug. What do you think about some of this stuff? Are you excited?
So I'm definitely quite jealous of the camera. I do have the Moto Z2 Play still, which I love, except for the camera. So that's definitely a feature I would love to upgrade. So it definitely has me excited, if not just for the trickle down into all the other cameras. We also know that Google's going to answer it in the Pixel 3 because that's one of their banner features as well, is just incredible camera software. So it'll be an interesting arms race from here.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you make a very good point. There are probably, if you think about it, if you're a smartphone manufacturer, and it is a tough gig right now. I mean, there's a lot of competition. These devices are so well refined, so well built now that, I mean, like the Huawei Mate 10 Pro, which I'll hold that up. Here's that dual cameras in the back of that. Now this is a slate gray, again, very reflective, very glossy, beautiful 6-inch OLED display as well. This thing is also a beautiful device, very powerful Kirin 970 processor. So ton of competition. And, but if you think about, you know, what are the high points, what do you need to just hit out of the park with every smartphone on the market today? It's, give me good call quality. That's basic. Everybody needs to have decent call quality on the phone. You want good communication. So, you know, a fast processor that's going to handle, you know, all the basics of texting, and then camera. I know if your camera is awesome and your phone lasts, you know, with good battery life and has a decent processor to back it up and call quality is good, that's kind of like the top. And then the rest, you know, you just go from there. So yeah, to see these guys really drilling down on camera technology makes a lot of sense. And it's amazing what you're getting now. I mean, it's funny when we used to go to press events, Marco, you'd see every member of the press and analyst would have a big honking barrel like I do, my Canon 80D, you know, crank that sucker up and fire up some really good shots because you want to get the products looking good, you know, so folks can get a good view of what we're looking at. Now you see it. Yeah. Like Chris, there you go. You see guys with that, you know, folks with that.
You see the smile on his face, the smile on that kid's face, grabbing that camera equipment. Yeah, I love it.
He's such a camera geek. It's good. Yeah. That's the geek in us too. Absolutely. But now you see a lot of folks showing up with, and this is a funny story too, Mark, right? We can talk about, you see a lot of folks showing up with their smartphones and it's, and really in certain lighting conditions, you don't have to mess with it as much. You know, that auto setting on a smartphone can really, a lot of times, capture the shot just as well, and sometimes a lot easier than messing with a big DSLR. And so actually see that now. Yeah, members of the press using smartphones. But interestingly enough, we showed up at the Samsung briefing, Mark, on what they do. They made us take our phones and hand them to them and cover them up with tape.
I was just going to say, I kept the stickers. So as soon as we walked in, Samsung put all these little stickers over every sensor on our device. Every sensor on our devices, these were covering them.
There you go.
Wait, where am I? There it is. Yeah, they covered the mics and cameras during the session.
Yeah, yeah. Like you literally had to give them your phone. They're covering that sucker up. And the reason they did that, obviously, if you have a DSLR, you're not going to get that image or whatever off the memory card easy and then leak it out. But you can do that on a phone and you know, hit it up to social media real easy. So that's obviously why they did that. But that was an interesting sort of inflection point, right? It's like, okay, we're so well connected now and strapped with camera technology in our phone that, you know, it's a threat to the embargoed press briefing. Wild stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, Marco, let's talk about something else that was a little wild. Asus unveils the Zenfone 5, blatant notched Android clone of the iPhone X, and Asus like made no bones about it, right?
Yeah, they welcomed the comparison, and it actually turns out, I guess today we have a story up of all of the notched phones out of MWC. Now, yeah. We shouldn't dwell too much on this, but there's two Zenfone 5s that look just like an iPhone 10. They're a little bigger. There's the standard Zenfone 5 and then the Zenfone 5Z. One has Snapdragon, I believe it was 636, the lower power, longer battery life variant. And then the 5Z actually has a Snapdragon 845, up to 6 gigs of RAM, super high-end platform. And the pricing for the whole lineup hasn't been disclosed. There's going to be some with 4 gigs of RAM, some with 32 gigs of storage, some with 64. But starting at only $499 for a Snapdragon 845 phone, that's pretty sick. Now, it has basically the exact same design language as an iPhone X. It's a little bigger and it's running Android and it has a fingerprint sensor. So they're not exactly the same, but I mean, you could easily mistake it for a big iPhone X. Now, comparisons aside, if you're going to copy a feature, was the notch really the best thing to do? The thing that was ridiculed by, like, I know people that have iPhone X's are all used to it by now. It's not a big deal, but it's just dumb. Just shrink down the bezel a little, keep it straight and not worry about doing weird things to video or your interface. Come on.
Yeah.
I agree with
that. You know, I agree with it too, but I wonder, you know, and I'm just going to play devil's advocate here. Obviously, when you look at like the Samsung Galaxy S9, very thin bezels up the top, super thin. There's no need for a notch. They got the earpiece and all the camera and the sensors up there, you know, the hall sensors, depth sensors. You know, it can be done, but the theory, at least with notch proponents, and I'm sure there's a few out there, is that you get some usable screen real estate above and around the earpiece and camera sensors. So put your network level over here and, you know, connection level over here and then, you know, whatever else, date and time over there. So that's what is being done with the notch. Is it not an efficient use of screen real estate when you don't have to eliminate that little ribbon for, you know, the date and time and carrier speed?
It's efficient in portrait mode and it is weird in landscape mode. It does the exact opposite in landscape. So now you have space that's either protruding into a video or space that's wasted, and not just video, web pages, what have you. So you might be correct in portrait, and then it's the exact opposite in landscape. It's just, I mean, it's not a huge deal. We're tech nerds and we're going to nitpick. All right. It's the iPhone X is a beautiful phone. It's just, if you're going to copy something, really, did you have all of these phones that came out with the notch literally have the notch because the iPhone X exists. Nobody's doing anything original. It's just a copycat thing for the sole purpose that Apple already did it. Apple got rid of the headphone jack. And so people got rid of the headphone jack. It's just, you don't have to do what Apple does, people.
So I'm going to, well, all right. I'm gonna play devil's advocate again. The Zenfone 5. Yeah, shocker. The Zenfone 5. That has an OLED display, correct?
You know, I'm not sure what type of panel is in there. I think
it's OLED. I think it's OLED. We'll have to look at it. But it maybe there's economies of scale in the OLED panel that Apple uses. Are they similar OLED panel types?
Yeah.
Maybe not the same.
Bigger, different size.
Glass. Okay. All right. Yeah, I'm just trying to think out the box. So it's really, you just think it's all aesthetics. They're just going after the Apple jam because they want to copy.
Yep. Yeah. They want to be in the conversation with Apple.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I think that's mostly it, and it's surprising. And then I think there was an Asus exec that went on record to say, you know, and it's not such a bad thing that people mistake this for an iPhone 10. Actually, kind of is.
Brand recognition.
Yeah, you know, so
you want them to not think it's a different phone.
So here's the thing. I'm going to go in the other direction for a second, and after me just whining and complaining, I actually think it's a really cool phone, and I think it's a good idea. For the sole purpose is there are people that simply won't buy Apple because it's Apple and they have philosophical problems with the company. And if you have iPhone X envy, but you want Android, you now basically can get it or will be able to get it soon. And that from that angle, it's sort of a smart move. But I don't know. I'm just not a huge fan of blatantly ripping off other companies. That's what Apple had done for so many years, what Microsoft had done for so many years. And it's those moves that create rabid haters of your stuff, not rabid fans.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, I would, it gives folks something to complain about. And I would agree. What do we sort of award with not only, you know, our wallets, you know, our voting with our wallets, but with brand recognition over the years, that's brands that innovate new products, that bring them to market, that evangelize that technology that they're bringing to market and true innovation and give you something unique and special. And that's really, you know, when you look at, you know, devices like Samsung's Galaxy S9 and S9 Plus, I mean, totally, you know, custom, unique design in a lot of respects. I mean, and there's some commonalities, obviously, between all smartphones, but industrial design, you know, great features, lots of stuff going on here. And there's plenty of other phones in the market that do that. Chris, you, and there's a very passionate following behind the Moto Z and Z Play family, mainly because of what they've done with battery life. The things are just monsters with battery life. And so there's lots of ways to carve out a niche by doing something innovative and special. And yeah, do you have to copy? I don't know. We don't get paid the big bucks to you know, set roadmaps for these folks, right, guys?
Exactly.
But you know, there's lots of the cool thing is there's lots of great options in the market these days. This is the Huawei Mate 10 Pro. Also, another excellent option that's coming. We're going to have a review on that in the weeks ahead, as well as the Galaxy S9 and S9 Plus. The Mate 10 Pro is a really cool device. 6-inch OLED display, 128 gigs of storage standard on this device. Big honkin' 4,000 milliamp hour battery. Kirin 970 processor that's somewhere in between the performance of a Snapdragon 835 and 845, the next generation Snapdragon that's in the Galaxy S9. So solid performance all around. With a 4,000 milliamp hour battery, the thing's going to be an absolute battery crusher, battery life crusher, I should say. And so for $799, it's a little pricey, but you do get 128 gigs of storage standard in this device. And it is very well built. It is equipped with lots of great equipment. Dual f1.6 aperture camera on the back. Again, some pretty cool, you know, depth of field effects you can do with the camera. I mean, these days, the major cell phone manufacturers are punching out some really compelling stuff. So lots of great options in the market.
While we're on the subject of Huawei, where are we with the intelligence agencies either recommending using or not using it because of spying allegations?
That's an interesting topic. I think obviously the three intelligence agencies, the CIA, the FBI, and the NSA, all went on record to say, we don't trust Huawei stuff. They also, I think it was ZTE, said that they feel the same way about that. And that's basically because...
I've heard similar things about DJI, too, with their drones.
That they
might be beaming back information and getting aerial surveillance over U.S. territory. Right. Again, no idea if there's any truth behind it, but it's interesting allegations.
There's also thought that they don't allow these major U.S. intelligence agencies to design backdoors into their devices. Don't give them access to their devices. And so what's really an invasion of your a security risk or an invasion of your privacy? Who's to say? There's lots of ways to look at that equation. But yeah, interestingly enough, the Mate 10 Pro is not carried by any major U.S. carrier, AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile. It's not
right
on there.
I think they were going to have a deal with AT&T, but then that got dropped out, right?
Yeah, it was probably, it would not surprise me if it was federal agency pressure that was causing that to happen. You can buy this phone at Best Buy right now, $799. It's available. It's unlocked. Mm-hmm. You just drop your SIM in and away you go. So you can get it on any carrier, basically. But yeah, they're not going to sell it to you, you know, or give you the subsidized deal for $30 a month or whatever.
Not that subsidies are really a thing anymore.
Yeah. Hey, rolling back to the chat, Tuan says, Chris, what about the DX01 USB-C model instead of replacing the phone?
So I saw that message. I have not actually seen that option. So if you want to shoot me a link after, I'm happy to check it out. I haven't heard anything about it. So interested to look.
DX01. That sounds like a killer camera. I don't know.
DX01 Mark, of course, does all the testing on cameras and sensors and lenses and everything ad nauseum. So they're a great resource. I didn't know they were in the manufacturing side. Maybe it's a different DxO. I'm not sure. Tuan, you'll have to clarify that.
It's the one-inch sensor, but pricey.
That'd be pretty nice to have in a phone. Because the biggest sensor I've heard of in a phone, at least in a flagship-type phone, is 2.3 inches, which is not terrible. A lot of point-and-shoots use that size of a sensor. But you're not going to get nice bokeh. You're not going to get super good low light performance like you would with a APS-C or full frame size DSLR, or even a Micro Four Thirds is going to be larger than that, inch. But a 1 inch is still going to be a nice improvement.
Yeah. All kinds of toys out there if you want to look at them. Let's move on, Chris. While we got you on the hot seat. Our good friend Tuan, actually, who's in the chat,
looked at the. I was just gonna rope him back in.
Yeah, Tuan, we should mic you up, dude. Netgear Nighthawk XS6S. Excuse me, easy for me to say.
X6S. Mesh, yeah, very difficult to say.
mesh extender. There it is. Yes, for extending your Wi-Fi network. Go ahead, Chris.
Which network extenders have always been kind of a dirty word, as like a not ideal workaround for covering large areas, because they typically don't have a dedicated link back to your central router. So you're getting, you know, half speed at best in communication. And they're often on a different SSID. So you've got to connect to a different network just going across your house. Which, you know, you can set up your phone to kind of prioritize one or the other wherever you're going to be, but it's still a hassle. So with the Nighthawk X6S, it solves both of those points, at least, by adding a dedicated backhaul. So it's dedicating a lot of its connection straight to your router off a tri-band connection. And it also allows itself to work on the same SSID as your primary router. So it handles its own handoffs. You don't have to worry about dead spots as much. So that's really nice. It's kind of getting into what you'd see in like the mesh router territory with the backhauls. And
what's Freckles doing down there?
Is that Freckles just wandering around? But I was checking Tuon's messages to make sure I'm not in trouble for anything I've said so far. So again, it is wireless AC, so it's nice and quick. It's not into the AX technology yet, but still should be plenty of speed for most people's home connections. The most important part of this is probably the performance and findings, since after all, no connection is good if you're getting slow speeds. So Tuon, again, testing in his home, found that he actually was seeing improvements even over the ASUS RTAC88U, which is a very nice standalone router. Once you get beyond 50 feet or so in both the 5 gigahertz and 2 gigahertz bands. So it seems like finally maybe a network range extender could be a good option.
Right.
Is it as nice as some of the mesh systems we have out there? I'm not necessarily sure yet.
It's definitely
that seems to be worth checking out. I think it starts at $199 for the extender itself, which a lot of the starter mesh systems seem to start around $299 or so, but you typically get three access points with that. It can be possibly a bit pricey, but should be very nice technology.
Yeah, it's an interesting solution. You know, as Tuon noted it in his headline, a simple fix for Wi-Fi woes, and I think that's the way you want to look at this thing. You know, a lot of folks, you know, they already have a quality AC router, and you know, when you think about in Tuon's case, in 88U, an ASUS AC88U is a nice, fairly new generation AC router that gets, you know, real good performance when in range. And really, that's, you know, the issue with that mesh solves is the issue of range and the issue of, you know, multiple devices connected at range. And so when you talk about multi-user MIMO technologies, and the range with that, having this mesh network extending that capability is important. And so,
and there is one other feature. Go ahead.
It allows you to stick with your existing router and then expand off of that, which, you know, instead of jumping to a brand new entirely mesh setup.
Absolutely. But
go ahead, Chris.
And speaking of multiple devices, the other nice feature on this net extender is it also acts as a wireless bridge for your wired devices. There's four network jacks in back that you can connect to for your home entertainment equipment or whatever else you have nearby. So, you know, your devices around the house that need a wired connection, but you don't want to run cabling up through your ceiling or along your walls and everything else, you can get that jump through wirelessly, but still make them work.
Right. Yeah. It gives you another hard Ethernet jack. You could easily see a home theater PC being, you know, a good example where, okay, I don't have a wireless card in here, or maybe it's some sort of streaming media device that you'd rather have a wired connection to it. If you have that extender plugged in, you plug into the back of it and away you go. Now you're still using the dedicated backhaul wirelessly to the router, but you have a wired link to the extender. So yeah, it's a good option. And I actually run the Netgear, what's it called? The mesh system. Thank you, aging brain. The Orbi, O-R-B-I, the Netgear Orbi mesh system. And it's great. It has a quad channel dedicated backhaul, multi-gigabit dedicated backhaul, and does really well. You know, we live in a home that's, you know, the router's down in the basement where all of the connections come into the house. And then, you know, in the far reaches of the house on the second floor up in the bedrooms, you a lot of times struggle to get a decent signal, or you might get a signal, but it's so degraded by the time you get it up there that it's really not that fast anymore. So this really helps that. You put a satellite up on the second floor and extends that range. So this is, you know, more of the same, but working with a traditional existing router, right? Good stuff. Good stuff from Netgear. And the key is the difference, as you mentioned, Chris, the dirty word, people say range extender and they're like, it's just going to water down your connection. It's usually they haven't been that great, but now these extenders are coming with that dedicated backhaul radio that gives you a direct connection to the router. And it really fans out the network in a mesh versus just repeating a signal. That's the diff, right?
Mm-hmm. And it does beamform it too. I should mention that.
Oh, okay.
So it can focus its connection or focus its signal to wherever your device is, and which is going to block out other directions. But, you know, obviously if you want what you have to be working a little better.
There you go. Would you put it in the office environment, Chris, or is this strictly a Soho thing?
This I would just keep in the home. You want generally more management features when you're going enterprise, corporate, whatever, because you need to be able to lock down things that people on the network are doing that could get you in trouble because you're the network operator. You're responsible.
Gotcha. Yeah, I figured I'd ask that question, make sure we're dotting our admin I's and crossing our T's. So, all right, let's wrap up with the Huawei MateBook X Pro, another device from Huawei. And this little laptop, 14-inch beauty, Marco, you were thoroughly impressed with, I believe.
Yeah, it was beautiful. You were my cameraman for the video that we have up on the site. So we got to check this out recently in New York City, and the Mate X Pro is Huawei's latest ultrabook, and it really has every feature you'd expect in a modern ultrabook, you know, and then some kind of cool, you know, little innovation. So Intel 8th Gen Core processor platform with discrete GPU option available. And that's, you know, kind of important to point out because Huawei claims this is the thinnest and lightest Ultrabook in this class that offers a discrete GPU option. The discrete GPU is a NVIDIA MX150. You have a nice solid aluminum construction, what's essentially a full-size keyboard, a really, really gorgeous display with super thin bezels, only 4 millimeters around three sides. And so what's cool with these thin bezels, lots of people ask, hey, you got rid of the bezels, where's the webcam? They could have done what Dell did and stuck it at the bottom of the screen, but they didn't. They actually put, they shrunk the size of the F keys down just slightly. And between the F6 and F7 key is a pop-up webcam. Now, what that does is twofold. One, it hides your webcam completely, but it also prevents you from having to stick a piece of tape over it or unplug it or whatever to disable it. Because when the camera's pushed down, it's completely disabled, can't be hijacked, can't be used for anything. It's like you're shutting it off when that's closed. You know, and you have all the other modern accoutrements that you'd want in an ultrabook as well. You have multiple USB-C. It does have full-size USB as well. You have a nice oversized touchpad with gesture support. Just an all-around really nice machine. We did not get pricing yet, but Huawei did say their top-end model, the Core i7 with 512 gig SSD and 16 gigs of RAM, is going to be disruptively priced. So they want to make a splash in the market.
Yeah. What do you think that 512 gig setup with 16 gig of RAM and the MX150 needs to be disruptive?
You know, I'm not sure. I haven't. It has to be cheaper than some of the killer ultrabooks in the class. So it would have to be significantly cheaper than what Dell's doing with the XPS 13, what HP is doing with the Spectre, and not significantly, but cheap enough where somebody who's not familiar with the brand is going to say, "I'm going to take a shot on this." You know?
Yeah.
So I don't know what number I would throw out there though.
If you look at if you look at the base config of the XPS 13, I think that starts at $799. I think the average with integrated graphics now, the average sort of mid range config is $999. I think maybe if Huawei hit the market at $999 for a 512 gig with 16 gig of RAM and the MX150, that's probably about just right.
You think they pull that off with the Core i7? That would be a freaking steal.
Yeah, man. That's why I think it would be disruptive. Yeah. Chris, would that do it for you?
with an i7, that pricing would be pretty insane. I'd expect more like, 11 or 12 at least for that. An i5, sure. But yeah, that would really be disruptive pricing at $999. I did have a comment on the webcam, since a big complaint with the XPS 13 with the low angle is you can't really type while using the webcam unless you want your knuckles to be the entire frame. I'm assuming that's going to be the same issue here with the pop-up webcam on the Huawei.
I would think so. It is elevated and angled, but your hand's going to get in the frame if you're typing. Yeah. And it's going to give you that beautiful, up the nose angle. But, so Huawei's market research, I don't remember exactly the numbers that they said, but it was something like a very, very small percentage of customers actually use the webcams on their notebooks. It was like a single digit percentage, whereas it was like 40 something percent cover it with tape. So they thought it was better to go for the security and the ability to disable it rather than put it in a better position and compromise the bezels.
I believe it. I never use the webcam on my XPS, so it's not a concern for me.
I wouldn't mind it.
I'm in the same boat. I think that's something I could do without as well. And then, having the ability to just push it down and shut it off, I think that's, a nice little side feature. The best of both worlds is if you can't get it in the top bezel because it's too thin, which clearly, Huawei, when you're talking about physics here, the camera arrays for notebooks, and that's another topic we should talk about on this. Camera arrays for notebooks just aren't getting in that size bezel, 4 millimeter bezel. The best of both worlds, if you can't put it up top, is to put it down bottom in the center where Dell is, because now you can angle it up by tilting the screen back. You can at least angle it up a little bit more, and then also give a slider, which is what Lenovo's doing on their X1 Carbon series, the new X1 Carbon series. They're giving you a slider, a simple little plastic slider. Cover that camera up. You might want to be deactivated too, so that the mic's not on or whatever. But yeah, that slider does the trick. That would be the best of both worlds. But this is sort of like at least a thought, a thoughtful innovation to addressing the issue. It doesn't address the camera angle though. It's still going to be pretty horrible.
how about this? How about everybody stop thinking you're so damn important that you have to cover your webcam? Just leave your damn webcam uncovered and deal with it.
Maybe they have something to hide. Yeah.
You're not that important.
I'm going to point it. Great. Such an Italian.
I'm just kidding.
No, I know you are. Sure you are.
Oh, yeah. I don't want anybody to see what goes on over my webcam. Unplug that thing.
Chris, do you have to worry about covering your webcam up there in Maine?
If anyone's really that interested, I guess they can have at it.
it's a pretty cool looking machine for sure. The display is a beautiful 415-inch display. Impressed with what Huawei's delivering these days, and I think that's a notebook that folks will take note of. Go figure.
How's the build quality flex on it?
Solid, it doesn't flex. That thing was a single sheet of aluminum that it was milled from. It's super strong.
Yeah, beautiful. Clamshell style. The cover is solid aluminum as well, on the lid. And it's very well built. Trackpad's huge. I don't know about having a trackpad that big. I'd be worried about palm rejection with that, but I guess they've got that down pretty well these days. It's massive. Yeah. But then I'd want to bang on the keyboard a little bit to get a feel for it because, chiclet style keycaps, see how it feels. But it felt pretty good. I just want to live with it a little bit.
Speaking of those giant trackpads, I wonder at what point they're just going to put like a Wacom tablet in them. That could be handy. I mean, I know a lot of them are going 2-in-1 style where you can go directly on the screen, but a Wacom could also be an interesting option to have.
Yeah, Lenovo's done that, integrated into the palm rest. Yeah, yeah. Lenovo had a series of workstation machines that have a little Wacom digitizer built into the palm rest. Years back, we took a look at a few of them. But cool stuff from Huawei. And, you know, it's a name that, you know, took us a while to figure out how to pronounce. And now we all know how to pronounce it. And it's a brand we're all talking about a little bit more, too. So they're making some inroads, clearly. We shall see. We shall see. All right. Well, I think that about wraps us. We're down to the bottom of the hour here, 6:30. And we should probably close it out. But Marco, can we talk about anything we're working on in the future? We usually give away some stuff every month. Can we say anything more than we could last week?
I can't. I've been slacking. It's been super busy. I don't have stuff. We don't have stuff lined up. I promise. I promise we're going to do something soon. But nothing to announce just yet.
We'll get cracking on it this week. We just got to nail it down, but we want to build the gaming rig. We usually give away a few, you know, a few gaming rigs a year, a few. That's kind of a lot. so yeah, we want to try and get Marco to build a gaming rig for some lucky winner. And we'll get a couple of OEM sponsors to pull it together. The GPU may be the toughest part, right?
Yeah, exactly. Maybe we do a Raven Ridge rig and we don't need a GPU.
Oh, that might be an idea. There you go. Now you get the wheels turning. All right, well, stick around for that, folks, because we'll be announcing it pretty soon, and you can always find out the details of that at hothardware.com, where you can find us on the web, facebook.com/hothardware, twitter.com/hothardware, youtube.com/hothardware, or Hot Hardware Vids, where hopefully you're going to hit that thumbs up for this little podcast we call 2.5 Geeks, and subscribe so we can let you know when we're going to air next, and you'll see all of our coverage of product reviews, Galaxy S9 review coming, Huawei Mate 10 Pro, working on that review right now, video will be coming for that, lots of good stuff. Stick around, guys, and what do you say, any parting words for the viewers before we go, guys?
Yeah, let me show off a couple quick things. I am working on a review of this. This is a tiny little, you know, 8 terabyte SSD from Intel. This is the P4510, so that's coming. And I'm going to try and cram in a review of this little guy as well. This is very similar to a previous Minix mini PC that I reviewed. This latest model has an M.2 slot and comes with Windows 10 Pro. So cheap little mini PC, affordable sub $300 full system, which includes an OS, but Windows 10 Pro and the ability to upgrade that one coming. So stay tuned for that also.
Cool. Chris, what are you working on real quick?
Yep, I've got the Latitude, what is this, the 7390 2-in-1 business notebook with stylus, and it seems pretty nice. Working on getting it all squared away, some early unit woes, but I think we'll get through those and have a very nice review on it.
Cool. From the folks at Dell, all that and more in the days ahead, so stick around to Hot Hardware and thumb up and subscribe here, and you'll be able to get it all in the interwebs. And until then, thanks for stopping by, everybody.